The Progressive Years, 1862 to 1876, Volume 2, Chapter 26. 1873, Colorado Interlude. It was 7:30 Wednesday evening, June 25, 1873, when the party of four, James and Ellen White, Willie, and Lucinda Hall, reached Denver. They were cordially received at the Walling home. Thursday and Friday they made preparation for the summer in the Rocky Mountains. To ensure comfortable beds, they arranged to have two hair mattresses made and bought pillows. Mr. Walling came from the mountains Sabbath afternoon and found the visiting party in the city park enjoying the Sabbath rest. After the Sabbath they started out for Golden City, in the mountains, Manuscript 8, 1873. Late Sunday afternoon they were at Walling's Mills and getting settled in the cottage that was to be their home for the summer. In a letter to Edson written on Thursday, July 3, Willie described their situation. "We are here at Walling's old mill, 2 miles from where he is now operating. It is a good house which he lets us have the use of. There are a parlor, dining room, kitchen, 2 bedrooms, and a sort of underground room, which serves as buttery and cellar below, and 2 bedrooms above. We are nearly settled. Walling lends us nearly all the furniture we need. Day before yesterday we awoke in the morning to find 1 inch of snow on the ground and the thermometer 2 degrees above freezing. How is that for the 1st of July? Father is quite well and cheerful. He is tinkering up shelves, bedsteads, etc., and keeps busy most all the time. July 4th. Father and I have been mending fence today. Expect Walling will lend us a horse as soon as the pasture fence is mended. Guess I shall plant some garden next week in Carrie Johnson, I was Canwright's secretary, pages 35, 36. Before long they were in a leisurely paced routine, with reading, writing, and recreation in the beautiful setting of the mountains. They treasured copies of the review, which came each week, and the monthly visits of the health reformer and the youth's instructor. Frequent letters from Battle Creek and from George Butler in Iowa kept them in touch with the activities and progress of the cause. Diary entries give us a picture of their devotional program. Wednesday, July 16, 1873. It is a beautiful day. We rested well during the night. We had our praying season in the family and also by ourselves upon the mountain. Thursday, July 17, 1873. After we had breakfast and prayers, my husband and myself had a season of prayer in the valley. Friday, July 18, 1873. It is a beautiful morning. After breakfast and prayers with the family, my husband and myself walk out and have a praying season alone in the valley in Manuscript 9, 1873. As they were walking in the woods Sabbath afternoon, July 12, they found some wild strawberries, the first of fresh fruit that they would enjoy. Sunday they picked a quart. From then on there was almost a daily picking of strawberries, sometimes several quarts. As these tapered off, there were raspberries in even greater abundance. This delighted the fruit lovers in a country where imported fruit was scarce and very expensive. The visit of Dudley and Lucretia Canwright. On Friday morning, July 18, Dudley and Lucretia Canwright, with their 15-month-old daughter, Genevieve, were at the Black Hawk station waiting to be taken to the White home. Willie met them at the station with transportation. There was a carriage, drawn by Sandy, for the Canwrights, and Walling's wagon, pulled by the 2 horses, Elephant and Bill, for the Canwright trunks. "We were very happy to meet them," wrote Ellen White. "They have a very interesting little girl. Ibid." The day was beautiful, and the Canwrights were soon exploring the mountains and picking strawberries. Dudley was exhausted from diligent labor through a Minnesota winter, and he was suffering from difficulty with his throat. James White greatly admired Canwright. It was a natural gesture to invite them to come to the mountains and join them in regaining their health. The 2 families enjoyed worshiping, hiking, horseback riding, and picnicking together. James and Ellen White and Canwright were also busy in writing, all enjoyed reading, especially the denominational journals as they came fresh from the review office. The evening after the Sabbath, August 9, James White fell ill, so Willie could not sleep till after midnight. The next day it rained, and too many people were in too small a space, one was a worn-out patriarch, and another a whining toddler. Tensions developed, and irritability soon manifested itself. Canwright was not known for his patience, as he later referred to the experience, he recalled, "I told the elder my mind freely. That brought us into an open rupture." Mrs. White heard it all, but said nothing, Seventh-day Adventism Renounced, page 42. There were weaknesses in Canwright's character, the knowledge of which had come to Ellen both by revelation and observation, but she had not found an opportunity to discuss the matter with him. Now seemed to be the time to talk some things over. In her diary for Sunday, August 10, she mentioned that they had some talk with brother and sister Canwright, and Monday they had some further conversation. The diary states, "We had still further conversation with brother and sister Canwright. They both rose up and resisted everything we said. I feel so sorry. Manuscript 10, 1873. The experience led to a setback for James White, and he suffered a night of illness. The next day there was a need to continue the interchange. Of this Ellen White noted, "We felt a duty to have some conversation with brother and sister Canwright. He was well stocked with unbelief, ready to pour out his complaints upon us and I think anyone who would give him an opportunity. We said some plain things to them." Ibid, the Canwrights moved out, going to the home of a brother Tucker. During the next few days Ellen White wrote a lengthy communication to them, opening with the words, "For some months I have felt that it was time to write to you some things which the Lord was pleased to show me in regard to you several years ago. Your cases were shown me in connection with those of others who had a work to do for themselves in order to be fitted for the work of presenting the truth, testimonies for the church, 3:304. The entire communication may be read in Testimonies, Volume 3, pages 304-329, under the title, To a Young Minister and His Wife. Canwright was described by Butler, who knew him well, as one who never could bear reproof with patience, or feel composed when his way was crossed, in Johnson, opposite, page 34. Shortly thereafter, the Canwright family was in California, and within a few months, during which the two families carried on some correspondence, confessions were made, forgiveness requested and given, and difficulties ironed out. All were soon working together, building up the cause of God. Another trip to Middle Park. James and Ellen White were delighted with their Colorado situation and kept busy with their writing and their recreation. They were soon considering spending the winter there, and starting to plan accordingly. They had talked some of taking another trip over the snowy range and spending a few weeks at Grand Lake, only a few miles from Hot Sulphur Springs, where they had camped the year before. Suddenly, Mr. Walling appeared on Sunday morning, September 14th, and said he was ready to take them to the park. "He hurried us all up," wrote Ellen White, "and we were all packed, about ready to start at 11 o'clock. Manuscript 11, 1873. The trip was much like the one before. They spent 3 weeks camping by Grand Lake. They returned to their mountain home Tuesday evening, October 7th, just ahead of a storm of wind and rain and snow. Manuscript 12, 1873. Wrote Ellen White in her diary on Wednesday morning. "We rested well during the night. It was quite a luxury to rest upon a bed, for we had not done this for 23 nights. We feel very thankful that we are at home. There is a severe storm of wind, uprooting trees, and even tumbling over outhouses. Yesterday when we crossed the range it was warm as summer, but this morning we see the mountain range is covered with snow. Mr. Walling took breakfast with us. Sister Hall went to Mrs. Lasky's for the two children of Mr. Walling, Addie and May. They are again with us." Ibid. Willie returned to Battle Creek to enter school. There was considerable conversation in the days that followed as to future plans. Should they go back to Battle Creek, or should they stay in Colorado through the winter, or should they go west to California? On Monday, October 20th, they received a number of letters from Butler. Tuesday it began to snow, and Wednesday morning, October 22nd, Ellen wrote in her diary, "It is like a cold January morning. The snow lies upon the ground 6 inches deep." Ibid. They spent the day writing letters, James writing at length to Butler. James White proposes broad plans for the cause. The several months spent in Colorado had given James White an opportunity to stand back and survey the cause as a whole. As he did so, he wrote several articles for the review, proposing daring and broad steps in advance. In late August, as Ellen White had completed copy for Testimony No. 23, which carried an extended article entitled The Laodicean Church, James White appended a 47-page statement he titled An Earnest Appeal, addressed to a broad group, the General Conference Committee, the picked men at Battle Creek, the committees of the state conferences, and the officers of the several branches of our tract and missionary society. This separately paged statement opens, "We take up our pen to address you with assurance that the Lord has been leading out our mind to consider the present condition of our people and the wants of the cause, such as we never felt before. In our Rocky Mountain retreat, we have taken time to review the whole ground of our position. We have surveyed the entire field of labor and have considered our own condition before God and that of our people. At our early season of prayer this morning, August 20th, as we retired from the family by ourselves, to especially seek the Lord, as has been our custom since we have been in the mountains, Mrs. White's feelings were with ours in the strongest assurance that the hand of the Lord had separated us from His people for a while, to improve our health, and to gather spiritual strength, and clear light as to the condition and wants of the cause, an earnest appeal," page 1. He mentioned first the publishing work and the need of literature in the principal languages of Northern Europe, spoken and read by many who had come to American shores. Then he laid out, in more detail, broad publishing plans. "We have recently been looking over the broad field relative to our publishing interests. We think the time has come to stereotype our standard books, pamphlets, and tracts, and at the same time take two sets of plates, one for a branch office on the Pacific Coast and one for the Atlantic. This would reduce the cost of our publications and the need of capital and office room in Battle Creek. The day is not far distant when our publications will be printed from duplicate plates, both on the Pacific and Atlantic coasts. This will greatly reduce our typesetting and our heavy freights on publications from the interior to the east and to the west. God is willing to do great things for His cause on the Pacific coast. The General Conference Committee is disposed to extend the work up the coast to Oregon and Washington Territory. The Friends of the Cause on the Pacific Coast should have the cash ready to liberally help establish a branch office and health institute on their coast in 1874. We would here state that those who may regard these suggestions as extravagant should understand that little has ever been accomplished in our cause without laying plans, and without persevering efforts to execute them. Ibid. 18:19. He called for the responsible men in Battle Creek to move ahead quickly with the development of the school there, and for enlarging the health institute to accommodate 300 guests. He pointed out that there was a need for two new power presses in the review office and more capital with which to operate. Then he made a bold proposal: the General Conference should expend, before the close of 1874, the sum of $20,000 in the preparation, translation, and publication of works in the German, French, Danish, and Swedish languages. And the General Conference must extend its missions to Europe, to the Pacific, and, in fact, in all directions, as far as the calls can be supplied. Ibid. 29. Testimony number 23, to which this appeal was attached, was in the field by mid-September and was penetrating the thinking of Adventists. S. Kenny Haskell was the first to respond, in the Review and Herald of October 21. Butler followed. In the meantime, letters had been passing back and forth between Butler and White regarding the early calling of the General Conference to implement some of these plans. From his Mount Pleasant home in Iowa, Butler wrote on October 24 an article for the Review he titled Testimony Number 23, and wrote White's address, in which he declared, "I shall not feel satisfied unless I say a few words in regard to it. Being one of those who firmly believe these testimonies to be from God, I feel a great interest that they should be read by our people and carefully considered. If it is granted that God is giving us light from heaven in regard to the duties and dangers of the present hour, the importance of our considering it well cannot be overestimated. This last warning from the Lord sets before us our peculiar dangers in the plainest light. These dangers I know exist among us. We are in the lukewarm state, brought to view in the Laodicean Church of Revelation 3. While we should be the most zealous church existing on the earth, or that has existed for 18 centuries, we are mostly asleep of the Review and Herald, November 4, 1873. Closing his remarks on the testimony articles, he stated, "This testimony to the church is just the thing we need at this hour. Shall we heed it?" Then he turned to the address of James White bound into the same pamphlet. Concerning its message, he wrote, "We are in the fullest sympathy. We are not ignorant of the fact that he has laid out before us an immense amount of work. Neither do we believe mere human agencies can ever accomplish it alone. We believe God has a special work for these last days, and that work must go to peoples, nations, tongues, and kings. It is worldwide." Ibid. Pointing out the importance of working with some definite object in view, he committed himself, issuing a rallying cry of courage in the Lord. Butler then hastened to Battle Creek to meet with the two other members of the General Conference Committee to consider the steps to be taken. On October 23, James White sent from Black Hawk a telegram urging that the General Conference session be scheduled for November 14 to 18, Manuscript 12, 1873. The committee adopted those dates for the session. The Review of November 4 carried the notice, and on the editorial page Butler explained the hasty arrangements. "There has been considerable said in the Review in regard to Brother J. N. Andrews going to Switzerland this season to look after the wants of the cause there, to attend to the extension of missionary operations in Europe, and to qualify himself by an understanding of the French and German tongues to aid in the preparation of works in those languages." Ibid. November 4, 1873. "The matter of our denominational school must be considered immediately." Ibid. "The interests of our tract and missionary societies should also be considered. Do we need a paper to be connected with this enterprise?" Ibid. "We especially need to consider those questions to which Brother White has called the attention of our people relative to placing the cause upon a broader basis by enlarging our institutions, establishing branches of them on the Pacific coast, and looking after these interests generally." Ibid. For the Whites in Colorado, there were several days of anguish trying to decide whether to attend the session or go directly to California, taking Lucinda Hall and the two Walling children with them. They decided for California. Walling had urged them to care for the girls. The mother of the children had pursued her course of fretting and scolding her husband, wrote Ellen White, until she had weaned his affections from her. Walling insisted that they take the children to California with them, and the mother reluctantly consented, Manuscript 13, 1873. This decision having been made, that evening, Thursday, November 6, they took the train in Denver for Cheyenne, Wyoming, presumably to catch the overland train the next day for San Francisco. But that night, feeling impressed that they should follow another course, James went to the front of the coach to meditate and pray. Of the experience he wrote, "We felt a power turning our mind around, against our determined purpose, toward the general conference to be holden in a few days in Battle Creek. In our mind we debated the probabilities of another shock of paralysis which would doubtless prove fatal, and decided that we would not count our life too dear to risk all in doing the will of God. And with this consecration, we became very happy before our train reached Cheyenne. It was then midnight, and after a few hours' sleep at the Depot Hotel, we laid the matter before Mrs. White, who for the first time seemed willing to risk another journey to the scene of our toils, trials, sicknesses, and sufferings. And in a few hours we were repacked, Sister Hall on her way to San Francisco to make ready for us at Santa Rosa in about 10 days, as we supposed, and we ticketed and checked for Chicago. At Battle Creek we were greeted heartily, not only by our denominational friends, but by businessmen and leading citizens, Ibid, December 30, 1873. When the 12th annual session of the General Conference opened on Friday morning, November 14, at 9 o'clock, James and Ellen White were there. The 1873 General Conference Session. Friday morning was occupied with the organization of the conference and the appointment of committees. Following this, Butler and White each made some remarks, thought by J. N. Andrews, editor of the Review, to be timely and appropriate. He noted the evident presence of the Spirit of God in an unusual measure. Since Uriah Smith's confessions and reconsecration of heart and life to the cause a few weeks before, the precise cause of Smith's disaffection and the unfortunate consequences that brought a blight upon the cause is not revealed in available documents, but there are several inferences here and there that three factors were present: James White's letters, which he felt were unjustifiably severe, messages of counsel from Ellen White that he felt were not really called for, and open criticism of James and Ellen White, which had a baleful harvest. The atmosphere in Battle Creek was changing. Everyone seemed to sense it, and it was to become more evident as the meetings of the session got underway. At 2 o'clock Friday afternoon, James White gave what might be considered the keynote address, explaining that the conference was called early to consider such pressing matters as extending the work on the Pacific coast, sending a missionary to Switzerland, and undertaking the establishment of a denominational school. Sabbath services were deeply spiritual services, setting the mood for the whole session. J. N. Andrews reported, "Sabbath morning we met at 9 o'clock for social worship. But Brother White was led out to speak at length words of exhortation, instruction, encouragement, and admonition. The Spirit of God especially attended them to all present. At 10:30 Sister White spoke on the temptation of Christ. The discourse was full of instruction and of the deepest interest. In the afternoon Brother White preached on the unity of the people of God, the perpetuity of spiritual gifts, and the sacred nature of our work. All hearts were deeply touched. Then followed an hour of testimonies, in which the Spirit of God rested down in a very special manner. The remarks of Brother Uriah Smith cheered all hearts. In the evening Brother Butler read an essay, a portion of which appears in this number of the Review, setting forth the fact that in every important work which God has committed to His people to perform, He has raised up and qualified men to lead in the accomplishment of the same, and showing the duty of the Church to strengthen the hands of those upon whom such responsibilities are laid. There was perfect unanimity of opinion and of feeling in the discussion of this subject," Ibid, November 18, 1873. Butler cherished a high regard for James White and greatly admired his vision and unique leadership. As Butler's message was turned over in the hearts of the delegates, they gradually saw that he was taking the position that one man, regardless of his title, was to be recognized as the visible leader of Seventh-day Adventists, as Moses was the visible leader of the Hebrews. This, of course, pointed to James White. The perils of this philosophy were not at the moment seen, but in time they would have to be reckoned with. White was now riding the crest of the wave of popularity, and Butler was quite willing that he should. One of the early actions of the session read, "Resolved, that we fully endorse the position taken in the paper read by Elder Butler on leadership. And we express our firm conviction that our failure to appreciate the guiding hand of God in the selection of His instruments to lead out in this work has resulted in serious injury to the prosperity of the cause, and in spiritual loss to ourselves. And we hereby express our full purpose of heart faithfully to regard these principles, and we invite all our brethren to unite with us in this action," Ibid, November 25, 1873. Other conference session actions. The session had been called on short notice, and the agenda consisted largely of the propositions and suggestions made by James White. After the election of officers and the General Conference Committee, attention was given to the large issues. George I. Butler was re-elected president, with Sidney Brownsberger to serve with him as secretary and E.B. Gaskill as treasurer. The General Conference Committee would be G.I. Butler, S.N. Haskell, and Harmon Lindsay. One action called for the Executive Committee to take steps for the speedy publication of tracts and periodicals in other languages. Believers were to be reminded of the importance of dress and health reforms. Other actions called for consolidating the interests of the tract and missionary societies of the state conferences into a general organization and for the General Conference to prepare or have prepared a work giving our reasons for believing the testimonies of Sister White to be the teachings of the Holy Spirit. While high on the list of matters calling for urgent consideration were the developing work on the Pacific Coast and the sending of a missionary to Europe, there is no record of specific actions relating to either of these. It was different with the proposed school, the conference committee, having been entrusted with the matter of raising funds for a denominational school, reported through the chairman. $52,000 have been pledged. On motion, the president was authorized to appoint a committee of four to act with the executive committee of the conference, in the formation of an educational society preparatory to the establishment of a denominational school. The following persons were appointed: James White, Ira Abbey, J. N. Andrews, and Uriah Smith, Ibid. The meetings of the session were held from Friday morning, November 14, to Thursday noon, November 20, with the mornings given to business and the afternoon and evenings to spiritual interests. When the conference was over, Butler declared, "I regard it as one of the most important meetings ever held among SD Adventists." He added, "The importance of any meeting does not necessarily arise from the numbers of those present or the amount of discussion and speechmaking connected with it, but, rather, upon the weighty matters decided upon, and the spirit of union and love prevailing among those in attendance." Ibid. Two columns of the Review and Herald, a half page, were devoted to minutes of the conference. Double that space on another page was given to the outpouring of hearts of church leaders testifying to the unity and good relationships among workers. J. N. Andrews commented in his report, "The hearts of the servants of God are more closely united in the bonds of Christian love, and probably there had never been a time when such perfect unanimity of feeling and of judgment has existed as at the present time." Ibid. George I. Butler, writing of the work of the Spirit of God in leading to unity, declared, "Never were there such clear evidences that God's Spirit was cementing hearts which have been more or less divided. Never were the principles so plainly seen before, upon which true union must be founded. These things cause our hearts to rejoice. And we have no hesitation in saying they will cause a thrill of joy in the hearts of the true friends of the cause from Maine to California." Ibid. Under the title Blessings Acknowledged, J. H. Wagoner declared, "I wish to add my cheerful testimony to that of others in regard to the blessed and heart-cheering meetings which have been held in Battle Creek. From the first, it was evident that the Lord had been preparing His people to take a more decided stand for union of heart and action in this sacred work." Ibid. Uriah Smith's testimony was a veiled confession, significant and reassuring. He headed it, "Prepare ye the way of the Lord." He referred to Paul's admonitions in 1 Corinthians 1 verse 10 and Philippians 2 verse 2, calling for all to speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you, but that ye be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment, and admonishing believers to be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Bringing the matter home, he said, "But that true blending of spirit and union of heart, contemplated in the texts above referred to, is what has been wanting. This may not be the time or place to enter into particulars as to the causes, manner, or extent of the failures that have been made. Suffice it to say that these are in a measure, at least, seen and felt. And there is seen also the necessity of immediately taking hold to remedy the evil, and there is no lack of determination to do it. And the progress that has been made in this direction is one of the encouraging features of our recent meetings. The work is being done on the basis of new principles, or principles newly seen, which will enable all to act understandingly, and which, therefore, gives cheering promise that it will be real and permanent." Ibid. Butler was overjoyed as he looked back at the session, and wrote, "Things which have long caused great perplexity and discouragement seem now to be passing away. There seems to be a clearer understanding of the causes of past difficulty than ever before, and a determination to avoid them for the future." He added, "The visit of Brother and Sister White among us has been productive of great good to the cause. Never was a visit more opportune than this. Indeed, it seemed to be a special providence of God. In conclusion, I wish to express the profound gratitude of my heart for the goodness of God to us, and for the clear evidence which has been given that the guiding hand is leading in this work. We have no cause for discouragement while this is seen in our midst. The work is onward. Let us close up the ranks, take our position on the Lord's side, and move on in our work till victory crowns our efforts. Ibid. A special ceremony. James and Ellen White stayed over in Battle Creek for the Sabbath, a day set apart for fasting and prayer. After the morning preaching service, there was an election of officers for the Battle Creek Church. The record is, although Brother White is not expected to be a resident of this city, after a few days, for some months to come, he was, by unanimous vote, requested to assume the pastoral care of this church, and he acceded to the request, the Review and Herald, December 2, 1873. This is perhaps understandable in the light of the philosophy of leadership advocated by Butler a week earlier, and the unity and good feelings engendered through the week. Uriah Smith and Harmon Lindsay were chosen elders, and M. J. Cornell and O. B. Jones as deacons. It was indeed an outstanding day in the experience of the Battle Creek Church. After the election of officers, a social meeting was held, and then a deeply interesting ceremony was conducted. The church, having entered into solemn covenant with the Lord and with each other to hold up the hands of those whom God has called to lead out in the work, and to stand in the forefront of the battle, and that they would faithfully regard reproof, and be true helpers in the work of God, Brother Uriah Smith made some very impressive remarks, proposing that the pen, the inkstand, and the paper to which they had attached their names should be laid up together as a memorial before God. Ibid. Andrews reported the day's activities, stating that in the evening James White led out in the celebration of the ordinances, with some 200 persons participating. Brother and Sister White, he noted, expect to leave immediately for California to spend a few months in the performance of important duties there. En route to the West Coast, James and Ellen White stopped over for a few days in Chicago to rest at one of the hotels and do some writing. In a message he penned there, James declared, "What we have witnessed of the good work of God the past 6 weeks we set down as good evidence that the guiding hand turned our course at Cheyenne, from the most desirable route to San Francisco, to the General Conference at Battle Creek. As we look back upon the labors of the past few weeks, it is a matter of devout thanksgiving to the great disposer of events that the cause at Battle Creek is settling upon a firmer basis, and that the minds and hearts of leading men are more firmly united in the great work than ever before." Ibid, December 30, 1873. Uriah Smith confessed further in an editorial item headed "Personal," written just as the Whites left Battle Creek for the West. Uriah Smith wrote in confession, "Many of us will ever look back upon the recent stay of Brother and Sister White with us with unfeigned pleasure. It has been a time when the Lord has signally worked. To see darkness and obstacles vanish from our path, as the mist lifts and silently clears away in the rising sunlight, has been an experience of exceeding joy, and will ever be a matter of grateful remembrance. The laborers who have attended the meetings now take hold of their duties in the various departments of the cause with such hope and courage, and buoyancy of spirit, and inspiration for their work, as they have never felt before, for union of heart, the only basis of all permanent prosperity and success, has been attained to a degree never before realized." Ibid, December 23, 1873. The Butler Paper on Leadership. The seed sown by Butler in his Saturday night presentation at the General Conference session entitled "Leadership," introducing a concept seemingly favorably received, but hazardous, took root. Soon the full address was published in a pamphlet and distributed throughout the denomination. Over the next 4 or 5 years, it was the occasion of discussion and concern. Basically, as James White later pointed out, it took the position that one man was to be recognized as the visible leader of Seventh-day Adventists, as Moses was the visible leader of the Hebrews, and what made this a very painful subject to us was the fact that the position was taken that we should be recognized as that leader. Ibid, May 23, 1878, when he started publishing the Signs of the Times in Oakland, California, in June, 1874, he devoted several editorials to the subject, opening his remarks by quoting Matthew 23:8, "One is your master, even Christ, and all ye are brethren." He pointed out, Jesus addressed these words to the 12, in the hearing of the multitude. And while they were a rebuke to the scribes and Pharisees, they were also designed to impress the disciples with the great truth that should be felt in all coming time, that Christ is the only head of the church. The Signs of the Times, June 4, 1874. The influence of the Butler address was to be clearly seen at the next General Conference session.